it's up to you to decide, you know, what you want to do and what you don't want to do, right? So
same
I was still drinking. I didn't find
alcohol,
not the drugs though, because it was a small town. Yeah. I wasn't gonna be like, hey, can I score some, you know, whatever, and then that would get spread around. So I was like, I'll just drink. But then I realized how much I really was drinking because I didn't have any type of pick me up or anything like that. And then it got to a point, man. You know, God's word sharper than a double edged sword. It was either go to prison, die in a car accident, kill somebody else in a car accident, or get sober.
Real business owner.
Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from, where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
You want to be an entrepreneur, you want to be successful, don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward.
Welcome back to the Real Business Owners Podcast with myself, Trevor Cowley. As always, Kel Goodman.
What's up? What's up?
Hello. We have a fun episode for you guys today. You know, we're at one of our mastermind meetups in Glacier, Montana. We thought it would be really cool to do a glamping resort for the mastermind, kind of get out in nature and experience that, because that's something that we haven't done. And through that experience, we connected with Devin Toll, who's on the show today. Welcome.
Thanks, guys, for having me.
It's dude. You know, again, like I said right before we went on, I'm excited to hear your story, because throughout the last few days, there's obviously been some people that have heard it. You know, you've been chatting with some of the members, or I think it was Andrew.
Great group of people. Andrew. You guys got a great team, group of people. So congratulations, man.
Thank you, man.
They were saying, man, I can't wait to, you know, listen to that podcast or that episode, because it's going to be good, because he has an amazing story. And so, and that's really what it's about. Like, you know, a story, I'll just guess that you've had to go through a lot of adversity, fight your fights, and get some wins slowly along the way. But your persistence is paying off, even though you probably went through times where you wanted to quit and give up and didn't
multiple
think that
times.
You were, your effort was going to ever be rewarded. And then, you know, even right before we got on the show, having you say, hey, you know, I've been waiting for a moment like this. And so even success leaves clues, right? And so, you know, every so often we can pick up those clues, but the majority of the time it's not going to feel like you're winning when you're making progress, or you're winning in general, right? You're going to be getting beat up. And so I want to hear your beat up story.
Beautiful.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and then the rise of the fiend. Yeah.
And the story of pulling off, like buying this center. I know you got others now as well, but, you know, Kayla kind of told me some of the workings that you did just to acquire this property that we're at right now. So I want to hear your story. I want to hear that story. I think a lot of people get a lot of value out of that.
Beautiful. You know,
and we have also, I forgot to introduce the queen of glamping,
Penny,
dude. Yeah. My bad. Penny.
She's actually part of the reason I'm even still here right now. So
been with you through some of those dark moments. And
definitely.
Yeah.
Yep. That's cool. She kept me going.
Hell yeah. So,
Penny Lee Penelope.
That's crazy, man. Yeah. I've
the glamping queen.
my wife's biological father, who didn't come into her life till she was like 19, you know? And then, and so we see him quite often. He had a dog that he was like, dude, that dog has saved my life so many times. And when that dog passed away, it was like super tragic for him, you know? Yeah. And so like, I know what an impact, you know?
Yeah. She's my fur baby. Yeah. I don't have any kids yet, you know, cross fingers, but she definitely feels like a child. 100%.
Yeah. She's your love, man. Well, that's cool.
Seems like it too. So
she's super
the feeling
chill.
Matches the look.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, let's
just
hear kind of
dive
like,
into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, let's dive into it, dude.
I mean,
how
did you grow up? Like, did you grow up in a good home? Both parents?
Yeah, I'll start.
Did great in school.
Start from the beginning. Then,
you know?
I'm originally from Rio Rancho, New Mexico.
Okay,
near Albuquerque. If you guys are familiar with Albuquerque.
Yeah, I had some land in Rio Rancho, bro.
Oh, really? Do you have it still or no?
I don't think so.
No,
I bought it off that land bank site. It was like outside Rio Rancho, towards the hills. It was like just like. I got online one day and I was like, you know, I bought, they're like $1,000 for
huge development.
An acre.
There's some huge development going on out there.
It's
now,
probably worth money now, but I think the guy I bought him with, my old business partner, I think he took him.
Oh,
and
wow.
I just never really,
double check that.
Well, we flew out and looked at him, bro. It was actually pretty
beautiful.
Cool. Like if we would have held on to that shit,
Well, they're still really, really cheap.
Maybe
land
somebody
out there.
Did hold on to that shit.
But I know where that's at. I actually think Albuquerque and all the way up to Santa Fe is actually pretty freaking cool.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
I know there's some rough spots, but it's a pretty cool area. Yeah.
It's gorgeous. Carmen, it's bad. But yeah, grew up in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Had an amazing family growing up. I was a Boy Scout, so that's how I kind of got into the whole camping thing and getting outdoors. My dad was an Eagle Scout. Grandfather was an Eagle Scout. He was a Special Forces Green Beret, so he taught my dad all kinds of, amazing outdoor stuff and fell in love with that. And then, grew up playing baseball, football, basketball.
You became an Eagle Scout then? Did
no,
you continue?
No,
I was like, wait a minute.
No, I did not.
You're going down this path of Eagle Scouts. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm a scout. But like,
I quit
did
it.
We ever
double Weeblow? I quit at double
Amen,
Weeblow.
Amen, bro. Really? I got like past wolf, bear.
I was in Weeblows. I didn't graduate either. Well, we're all the black sheep of our family. Yeah. It probably sounds like
entrepreneurs can't handle the structure. We rebelled. At Weeblows.
Actually, that was kind of one of the reasons why. And then I had sports and all that other stuff. So I was focusing more on sports and school and
Weeblow's
everything.
Weeblows honor, dude. That's what we can do here, dude. Awesome, if you guys know, you know.
We were like 13, right? Or
how old are you?
I was born 85.
84. 38. Yeah.
Oh, so we're around the same age.
83.
I thought Scouts was a Utah thing forever.
And it, like, not a nationwide.
Not
deal.
A nationwide, dude. I just figured, dude, that was like our thing. Yeah.
I did too.
We've got Mormons and Scouts because they were like intertwined.
It was.
Like, if you went to church, dude, you're in Scouts.
Well, we did our
you,
Scout stuff at the church house all the time.
Yes. That's maybe why.
From little car races to.
Yeah. Oh, I love the Pinewood Derbies, man. I was actually going to ask you guys, what was like your highlight of Boy Scouts? For me, for sure, it was the Pinewood Derby races. We always had like the most amazing little Pinewood Derby.
I mean,
thing,
campouts were cool too. When you're a kid, camping's always.
Dude, we did extreme ones. We did a 5-day hike over Pine Valley Mountain in our area, and it was like, I'll never forget it. And then we did a bike ride to the Grand Canyon, which is a couple hundred miles away.
Damn, those dad scouts were committed to you kids.
Dude,
5 days.
Wow.
That's why I can't be a scout leader, bro. You ain't going
to
see me out of my house for 5 days.
We did have
to
throw the bikes in the trunk for a lot of it, but we rode the bike down Arizona Strip through Mount Trumbull and to the freaking rim of it.
So were you from Arizona?
No, we live on the border of Nevada and Arizona.
So you guys actually go Southern like all Utah. Of our all of our experiences were in New Mexico. We didn't really get to go around and do a bunch of stuff. So
anyways.
Well,
enough with the scout.
We gotta hear the story.
Cool.
So it was a pretty stellar baseball player. I was always all stars, all
the
other
what
stuff.
What position? Shortstop or second?
I literally played anywhere they needed me to. So, what my favorite positions were growing up was pitcher, catcher, and third base. Like, I liked being involved, and I like, I could take the hits and stuff like that. Even though I wasn't the best fielder all the time, that ball would get knocked down, and I would get it to first base and everything. So, that was cool. And then,
did you win any state championships?
We got so close to winning our All Stars.
I saw your soul leave for a second. Yeah, dude. We were almost there, not quite.
Yeah, but you know what's crazy? We actually just
well, you're talking to a Utah state champ here, so I just want you to know that.
Awesome. Well, congratulations.
1997.
That's amazing, man.
Look
congrats.
It's pre-internet, so you can't even look it up. That's the problem. True. That's what pisses me off.
True. We were actually in the championship for All-Stars, and we lost the final game. It was devastating. One of the most heartbreaking things.
Yeah.
And then I was one of the only freshmen to make varsity at Rio Rancho High School, and this is where the story kind of, I guess, really starts, is I was 15 years old. I just had a phenomenal game. I think I might have hit one, or I know I hit at least one home run for sure, two home runs, and I was one of the two freshmen that were playing this varsity game, and it was against like one of the local rivals or whatever. And after the game, I think I had 7 RBIs that game. And my coach, my favorite coach, Coach Metzger, shout out to you if you ever see this.
Never know, bro.
Right? Yeah, what you never know. Coach. He came to me and he's like, Devin, you have to leave right now. And I was like, no, coach. Like, I mean, I know the freshmen have to clean the field and do everything. I was like, I know I had a good game. I mean, I appreciate that. But he's like, no, you have to leave right now. And I'm like, oh, man. And I realized that my dad wasn't in the stands the whole time. And my dad never missed a game, man. That was like one of my dad's favorite things was to watch me play baseball. And right then I knew like something serious had happened for them to tell me to leave.
Yeah.
And then my grandma and grandpa came to me and they're like, your dad was pronounced dead at University of New Mexico Hospital. I was like, I didn't know what to say. Yeah. I didn't know what to think.
Yeah.
I was so like, what's going on? You're in like
ninth grade or something at this
point.
Yeah,
I was a freshman. They went and got my brother from school. So we just rode home and my brother and I were just holding each other like, what's going on? And then we just get home. This was obviously before cell phones, social media. So there was no way of really kind of knowing what's going on. Finally found out that he actually got in a severe car accident, was ejected from his truck, had third degree burns. And on the way there, they were working on him and he passed away. But then they were able to resuscitate him somehow and he survived. And after that whole thing, during that time, my family had had an embroidery company, you know, doing hats and shirts mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He was working 9 to 5 pretty much my whole childhood. And then he finally was just like, man, I would just want to do my own thing. So he found an investor to do, you know, to help him with the embroidery business. Did, you know, back then, I think it was like $1 million in revenue or something like that, almost 20 years ago, whatever it was. So they built a pretty, you know, successful company. They had
like $10 million now with
inflation. Yeah, shit. No, for shit. Sure. Yeah. And I mean, it was crazy because he basically started from nothing as well. And, you know, seeing my mom and dad run their business from my house or their house and everything, I still have dreams of the embroidery machine going, you know, I could hear it from my room. My mom and dad working until 3, 4, 5 in the morning, you know, as you know, entrepreneurs work 24 hours.
Shout out to embroidery people, dude, because we just had a homie that is in the embroidery mm-hmm. business on the podcast, Cohen.
It's a lot of work, a part of our inner circle.
And he talks about being up like all through the night working on shirts stuff, you know? Stuff. So it's like literally grind, you man. Say that story. It's like, just reminds me of like anybody that's in that business has mm-hmm. to know that
working a lot
is
hours.
What comes with it initially. Like maybe exactly. you can work your way out of it, but like,
and then, well, they were
I gotta
just
respect the work that they put in.
They man. Did, man. Yeah. Thank you. They were just at a point to where they're going to start hiring people. They were about to sign a lease to like move the shop out of the house into a location and all that stuff happened. And obviously that all went out the window. But that's really where I got my entrepreneurial drive and my spirit from was from my dad. My mom was a helper. You know, she took care of us kids. We had a phenomenal childhood. My grandparents, built a house right across the street from us in Rio Rancho. So every day from the school bus, I would go home or go to my grandma's house. And
you're one of those lucky kids. Yeah. Huh?
Very blessed. Grandma, and then my grandma
across the street.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'd always go to Coach D Lake and do fun stuff. That's where I kind of learned about glamping before it was glamping, because my grandpa had a pretty decent RV, so we'd be able to go to the lake, didn't have to set up tent and stuff like that. And so that was pretty cool. And my mom would always call me like, Devin, you need to come home. And I'd be at grandma's, you know, doing homework, eating snacks and stuff. And then, you know, from there, when my dad was able to come home after a few weeks of being in the hospital and everything, he had 8 like floating ribs, like completely broken, like floating. And I've broken a rib and I know how painful it is. Yeah. So I couldn't even imagine that pain. And, that's when, things went from, you know, kind of bad to worse kind of say, and he had to sell his business. Obviously had a ton of bills. So whatever he sold it for, you know, paid for all that other stuff. So we basically started at square one. Uncle Kenny, shout out to you, brother. Love you, man. My dad wanted to move to Texas to be closer to his brother. Just, you know, he didn't know how much time he had and never really got to spend that much time with my uncle. So wanted to be in Texas, kind of have a new start, just kind of get away from everything. And, it went pretty well, but at the same time, I've come from a family of alcoholics and, you know, it's part of my journey as well. And he couldn't, you know, stop drinking and Vicodin and all that other stuff, and ended up passing away right after my senior year from cardiac arrest from over drinking and drugs and alcohol. And when I was 18, I did one semester at University of Texas, San Antonio. And then once he passed away, I was like, man, I just want to follow my baseball career and kind of do it for my dad, because I was just burnt out, you know, playing baseball all my whole life. And then, you know, getting into skateboarding, actually my sophomore year and everything was a big thing for me. It helped me kind of find my independence and, you know, find alternative activities and stuff like that. And really with all that other stuff I was going through, I actually didn't play baseball my sophomore year. Like the whole town was mad at me. Like everybody knew who I was as far as baseball. Like my coaches, you know, would talk crap to me. Like my friends.
I'll tell you this much. I didn't have any of that, you know, and I rode coattails of a lot of great baseball players. So that state championship.
Yeah. Amen, man. That's so awesome, bro.
I can't take credit. So I was the run on the team.
But when I did leave though, cause I, like I said, I quit for my entire sophomore year and we moved to Texas. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anybody. There was not any really skate parks anywhere there. We had just actually, I got arrested when I was 15 years old for skateboarding downtown in New Mexico. You know, being an honor roll student, being an athlete, I got to see kind of what the extreme sports, you know, what's the word I'm looking for?
Stigma.
The stigma was, you know, and I was just like, oh my gosh, like, wow, this is a real thing, you know? And at that time I wasn't on drugs, wasn't drinking anything like that. So I went to my grandpa, I was like, we got to do something for the community out here. There's not any skate parks out here. Like, we're not trying to cause any problems. So we went to the county and said, hey, can we raise some money to build skate parks? We ended up raising $250,000, got three skate parks built in Rio Rancho, and didn't get to ever enjoy them because we were in Texas at that point.
Yeah.
But got to go back for the grand opening and everything. Got to meet Andy McDonald. That was super cool. And then went back to Texas, played baseball and football there. When I went back, because there was no skate parks really in San Antonio, none of that vibe. So I wanted to be able to connect with local community and stuff. So I went to the O'Connor High School baseball coach, Coach Colin Back. I said, where's the baseball coach's facility? Said, oh, he's in the training room getting stim. And I was like, oh, man, I don't want to bother him right now. Like, no, go talk to him. I said, okay. So I go back there, nervous as hell. Coach goes, what are you doing? I was like, hi, sir. My name is Devin Toll. I just moved here from New Mexico. I'm going to be your new third baseman. And he said, well, I like my baseball players to play football. Did you play football in New Mexico? And thinking, you know, 5A Texas football is like, man, I was like, honestly, I played like 1 year of YAFL football, but I never really played football full time. He said, but I like my baseball players to play football. And the only way you're going to be able to make the team is try out for football. And I was just like, dude, this is 5A.
Was he the football coach too?
He's
both coaches. He's
both coaches. Like, yep.
He was the same player.
Defensive lineman and linebacker coach. And so sure enough, I get mixed up with these, you know, huge Texas bred football players. And I was a lean baseball player at the time. Mm-hmm. And it ended up actually being one of the most amazing experience. I ended up getting the starting position for middle linebacker.
Yeah.
So that was super fun. And I did get All-State baseball for Texas, right field. Didn't win any championships, unfortunately.
I quit at 14 at the pinnacle. I hit the peak of a state champion. And I wanted to retire that way. So I stopped playing.
Really?
No. I started smoking weed and started running with the wrong crew. And then that got me away from baseball.
That was the truth. That's the next part of my story.
I'd like to say that I retired.
That's kind of the next part of my story, too, is after my dad passing away and everything and got a baseball scholarship to Borger, Texas, played there for a little bit, realized that wasn't the path that I wanted to go to. Started studying architecture, went to the University of New Mexico, studied architecture. Once I was done with that, went back to San Antonio, Texas. That's when I started getting into marketing and sales and how can I find this entrepreneurial path. But I knew I kind of get it, a 9-to-5 at least to get, you know, some experience under my belt and everything. Started learning how to do landing pages. Facebook, I think, was just getting started. So that wasn't really like a big thing. And then worked for a company called Red Ventures, where they sold direct TV. And I was all getting inbound calls. And I kept seeing like all the people calling. From there, just wanted to figure out how people were generating leads. So once I started that, that's what really started my entrepreneurial path. And put $4,000 down on an owner finance property. And that was like my first time trying to get into real estate kind of stuff. Ended up being a scam. Went up to the house. It was literally boarded up. It was raining. It was like one of those things you see in a movie. I just got dropped off, had my bag, went up to the door. I was just like, what the heck is going on? And that's when I was really struggling with, you know, alcohol, drugs, you know, obviously it being in my family and all the stuff that I was going through. Like, my best friend had committed suicide, had broken up with my ex. I was just in a really dark place. And that's when I was like,
you go straight crackhead mode or what, bro?
Pretty much, dude. Yeah. I was binge drinking alcohol. I was doing, you know, pretty hard drugs. And I just knew, like, that just wasn't me. You know, the spirit was calling me to something bigger. I always knew I had a bigger purpose in life. And that was, I guess, one of my biggest things, was I was afraid of my own success and afraid of, like, what, you know, I was supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And I just, everything I tried doing in New Mexico, or excuse me, in San Antonio, just wasn't working. So when I got Penny, and we had just got a new job, it was like $120,000 a year for Spectrum when they had just bought out Time Warner Cable. Mm-hmm. And the same type of thing, it was for inbound sales. I was like, man, this is not what I want to do. I felt empty and everything. So Penny, the one who just wanted to go lay down, she's been super tired, so she's taking a little nap. And then
What'd you get Penny for? Were you like on the hunt for a dog, or is it just because you were at a dark place and like, I just need comfort?
So my ex asked me for $500 to go grocery shopping to get us groceries. I was exhausted. I was sleeping. She comes back like hours later. I was like, where have you been? She's like, well, I didn't get any groceries, but I did get this. And then I look up and she's like, here. And it's Penny, literally like the size of my hand. And so she got this dog without telling me. It was supposed to get groceries. And I was like, here, give me the dog and just get out of here, please. So Penny hops on my shoulder. And then ever since then, man, we've been like inseparable. Homies, yeah. And, you know, going through the drugs and the alcohol and all that other stuff. When I finally decided to leave, you know, I brought Penny with me. And let me digress back to the Spectrum thing, is that $120,000 job, ended up just quitting. I told Penny, I was like, Penny, we're going to start WDMC, Weird At Marketing Company. It means We're Devin Allen Toll Marketing Company. And so ever since then, 7 years ago, that's where I started doing landing pages, websites, all of that stuff. And so when I moved to Montana, didn't have a vehicle, didn't have anything. I had called my mom, said, Mom, I got to get out of here. She bought me a Greyhound bus ticket. It was supposed to be 2 days. It ended up being 7-day bus trip. And I don't know if how many people have ridden on Greyhound buses, but you see some crazy stuff,
yes,
right?
Do. Crazy. Only stuff. One day, and that was enough.
Yeah. Crazy stuff, man. Yeah. And
like a couple hours on a plane is good enough.
Yeah. Greyhound. Yeah, right, but there people were shooting up heroin on the back. I was like, damn, this is like hardcore. And so the first stop we had, this person that came and sat next to me, like, I just wanted to make conversation with him. I was like, hey man, so where are you going? He's like, oh, I just got out of prison of 33 years. Like, I just got out right now. I was like, okay, for what? He's like, for murder. And I was like, whoa, okay. There's a dude that just got out of prison sitting right next to me for murder. This is crazy. And so then it just sparked an idea to start writing. Like, I knew it was going to be literally across the United States and going to be sitting next to a lot of people. So I got out my laptop and was like, you know what? I was like, do you mind if I document this? So I actually started writing a little like short story book called 50 Shades of Greyhound. So I would interview each person as we sat next to, like, about their story and what happened. And our first leg, it was in Lubbock, was delayed 8 hours, causing me to miss every single one of my connecting bus rides. So what was supposed to be that 2-day bus ride ended up being 7 days. it was earned, right? Getting up there to Montana. And when I got here, same problems, man.
Yeah.
Same. It's up to you to decide, you know, what you want to do and what you don't want to do, right? So I was still drinking. I didn't find
alcohol,
the drugs though, because it was a small town. Yeah. I wasn't going to be like, hey, can I score some, you know, whatever. And then that would get spread around. So I was like, I'll just drink. But then I realized how much I really was drinking, because I didn't have any type of pick me up or anything like that. And then it got to a point, man, you know, God's word sharper than a double-edged sword. It was either go to prison, die in a car accident, kill somebody else in a car accident, or get sober. Yeah. And it would literally like cut through me. And I was just like, whoa. I was 38, I was 40. Yeah, so I was 34. And finally just quit cold turkey drinking. So now I'm sober for 4 years. That's the only reason why we're even sitting here right now. And I was in the manufactured and modular home business as well in San Antonio. So when I moved to Montana, noticed a huge shortage of short-term rentals, started seeing all those little shed companies everywhere. I know in Utah and stuff, they have quite a few of those different shed companies. Yeah. I was like, oh, these would be cool cabins and stuff, right? Didn't have the money to really buy a property. I have another company, it's called Elevate, which is a skateboarding, snowboarding, kind of extreme lifestyle brand. And shout out to, you know, the Missoula and Montana skate scene. They have some amazing skateboarders. I got connected with some of them. I tore my ACL, so I couldn't really skate, but I still wanted to be involved and be able to help the local community, kind of like I was in Rio Rancho. And so I said, hey, guys, I'm going to find a warehouse for us to lease, and then, you know, let's build a little mini indoor skate park so you guys have a place to skate in the wintertime. And so found an amazing warehouse that we were going to be able to get a quarter of the warehouse.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, like after 90 days, because of all of the, not permitting, but insurances and all that other stuff, it fell through. But it was weird. I was upset for maybe a few minutes, and then God was like, I got something better for you. I don't know if anyone's ever seen that little teddy bear meme where it's like there's this little teddy bear and Jesus is holding this other teddy bear behind it. It's like, I got something better for you. It was like one of those moments, man. And sure enough, the next...
I didn't know where you were going with that, but yeah, I have seen that one.
Yeah? Yeah. So it was like that.
I was like, oh yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah. So the next day, I'm in the Missoula selling geodesic domes. I just got into like the glamping industry, found out about the domes and stuff. And this guy comes in. He's like, man, these are cool. He's like, I build modular bathrooms, and I'm actually looking for a warehouse, and I'm looking for a company to work with to build bathrooms. And I'm just like, wait, what? I was like, first of all, what's your name? You know, like, nice to meet you. And then you said you're looking for a warehouse, because I'm looking for a warehouse too. And he said, I just found an owner finance property in Stevensville, Montana for $2,500 down. It's 5 acres, but I just don't have the $2,500. And I was like, dude, where did you come from? What is going on right now? The day after that other deal had fallen apart. It was on Christmas Eve, actually, 2019. I drove up to Stevensville. I didn't have an address. I didn't have anything. I was literally just like being guided. And sure enough, I'm driving down East Side Highway. I look over. I see this warehouse on this big parcel of land. I'm like, there's no way that this is it for $2,500 down.
Yeah.
So I find the guy's number somehow. I forget how I found his number, but I call him. He calls me back on Christmas Day, and I'm standing on the property, and he goes, it's available. Do you want it? And I'm like, is it really $2,500? He said, yes. Sure enough, boom. Got 5 acres of land for $2,500 down, owner financed with a warehouse the very next day. And I was like, whoa, this is legit. I'm like getting chills, like just talking about it. It was legit divine. So sure enough, man, we built a little indoor skate park. The local community absolutely loved it. I was doing the domes and the sheds. So like all of the, you know, pieces were finally falling together. And I was just like, whoa, this is like magical stuff, man. So I was able to get the sheds out there, put my property up on HipCamp. Are you guys familiar with HipCamp? It's a booking platform for camping and glamping. Yeah. But
yeah, like Airbnb. I think I've seen that one.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. So it's a smaller booking platform, but you know, for that type of industry, it's pretty popular.
It's just a different shit.
Different stuff, yep. And put up raw land, really didn't have that much money, and said, I called the yurt manufacturer. I said, hey, man, I just bought this beautiful property. I've been wanting to, you know, do some glamping. I've been running the numbers on this stuff, and even if it's just half of what I'm looking project, I mean,
still
it's
make money.
Make money, yeah. So I was looking at a 30% occupancy with the yurt and the hip camp. Was like $2,500 to $3,000 a month or something like that. And that was going to cover the mortgage. So I was like, sweet, dude, this is, you know, this is a possibility.
Yeah.
So the yurt manufacturer went ahead and said, yeah, I'll give you a yurt. He's like, I got 14 more too in the warehouse. And this guy literally was only 3 miles from the property, which is another crazy divine thing. So got me a yurt, ended up selling some of the other yurts. And that same year, the year after in 2020, 21 got nominated for the best hip camp in all of Montana. And I freaking, and sure enough, man, grace to God, I won and then got featured in Forbes. So this is where the exciting part of the story happens, because had the hip camp actually got featured in Forbes, the local community was, you know, fully backing it.
By that point.
Yeah, but the local municipalities weren't there. You know, that was a whole nother thing, having to fight through all that stuff. That was, that's been a 3-year battle. Yeah. Finally had to go through
it. Can't all come easy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You gotta. It was getting too good there for a second.
So ended up getting a
fuck. Yeah. All the dominoes are falling for this fucking guy. Yeah. I thought you said you had some shit to overcome.
Yeah. No, so
let Jesus take the wheel, man.
Ended up getting I didn't even get a warning from the county. They came to my property, gave me a cease and desist. Wow. I already had a an approved septic.
Not shout out to them.
Yeah, no. And actually, there's a huge lawsuit that's taking place. It's a class action lawsuit that we're working on because of all this stuff that's happening. And you know, they gave me a cease and desist. Had to shut down for almost a year and a half. Literally was detrimental. I was literally about to lose everything. And I was like, man, what am I going to do? I was like, do I just sell this property? You know,
so the obviously, kids had nowhere to skate no more?
No, they couldn't skate there or anything. Like I was court ordered to move out of my house. It was insane. And while going through this, I had a conditional use permit for a porta potty while I was going through the permitting and all that other stuff, but they didn't care. And the good old boys club is a real thing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, for sure.
And so when they saw some kid from, you know, out of state coming in and having some success, they were like, no, we're shutting this down. And so while all that was happening, I was, you know, contemplating like selling it, you know, well, how do I pivot? What do I need to do? And with the social media at glamping.global and our Facebook group and everything, this property actually got posted in my global glamping group on Facebook, and I had written it down. I'll have to find it somewhere or whatever. I'll send you guys an email later, but I wrote down on my, you know, my dream and my goal is to have a glamping resort, like a flagship glamping resort with cabins in a fire pit, tree houses, a bar restaurant, a dome area with a, like an event dome. And this literally had every single thing, and it got posted in my group. And I right away, shout out to Adam Greenberg. I messaged him. I was like, hey, man, I'm the founder and CEO of Global Glamping. This is like exactly what I'm looking for. Is there any way we could possibly work out a deal? Because it was $3 million, and I definitely didn't have $3 million liquid to be able to be like, yo, let's do this, right? So I had to kind of get creative on some stuff. We looked for investors for almost 6 months, you know, sending out email campaigns, like trying to, you know, find private equity, whatever. No one wanted to do it because there's a mosquito on your finger. You get that. And but the reason why he was selling it is 12 of the 15 domes had actually collapsed in the wintertime because their management company wasn't up here at all. They said that they were, but no one was looking after the property. And so a bunch of domes collapsed and everything. He's like, well, that's what he disclosed in the thing. And so when we were telling people what was going on, that was like a huge deterrent for it. But me now had setting up multiple different glamping locations and domes and everything. I knew it wasn't that big of a rehab. So I was like, well, shoot, man, if he doesn't sell this thing, you know, he's definitely not going to get the $3 million because not getting any revenue for 1-2 years is going to significantly lower the value property of the property. And I was like, how can I structure this deal? I was like, oh my gosh, this light bulb went off. I was like, well, shoot, we could do all the rehab, get the domes up and running, get the site actually active, at least generating some income.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll allow me to do the full rehab on the property and use that as a down payment, and maybe he'll owner finance it to me. And so I called Adam and was like, hey man, it's a shot in the dark, but I had an idea because he'd been looking for investors. I've been looking for investors.
I built a pool.
Hey man, what if we did, you know, cause it was about a $250,000-$300,000 rehab total. It's like, let's use that as the down payment. We'll get the site up and running. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll pay him X amount per month. And at least now whatever happens, you know, he has a site up and running. I get to be able to get some content, see how a full resort actually functions and everything. And I think that was like late April or sometime when we made that offer. And he said yes. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is a dream. Cause this is the whole time where the other property was shut down. I didn't know what to do. I was going to have to sell if I couldn't figure something else out. This was already up and running. And then I call them again in July cause they were still working out paperwork and documents. Like, hey man, like I really want to be able to make this deal work, but it's already, you know, getting towards mid season. And if I'm going to be able to salvage anything, I need to get up there like right away. And so he called me the next day, July 2nd. Said, cool, as long as you got the insurance, go ahead and get up there, get it running, and we're good to go. Get all the paperwork done. I was just like, oh my gosh, thank you, God. And sure enough, that same day, July 2nd, last year, drove up here, brought a team with me, was able to get this entire place up and running, put the units up on Airbnb, boom, instantly booking. I'm just like, oh my gosh, Glacier really is like like the spot.
Yeah.
And, you know, here we are this next year. Now we got, I think, 80% of the domes back up and running, obviously working out some, you know, some quirks and everything like that, getting the team together, getting it all up and running. But this is actually now here, like the dream that I had, because I wanted to be able to do masterminds to be able to show people how lucrative the glamping industry really is. And then if I was to start, you know, now what I knew 4 years ago, I would actually wouldn't do like the whole yurts and domes and everything, because that, you know, all in cost is anywhere between $30,000 to $50,000 roughly, depending on if it has a bathroom, if it just is a structure or whatever. But you can get a bell tent for, you know, $600-700 to even go online on Facebook Marketplace, furnish it for $1,000, and people will pay $150 to $200. So that's how I would start now. But now I'm like so deep in it, it's like, hey, we already got this thing up and running. Yeah. So
yeah, it's so doable. I mean, obviously the land's the biggest part, right? Mm-hmm. And so what's really cool about your story, man, is two things for me, right? One, you call this guy up, totally transparent, shot in the dark, bro. But like,
100%.
Let's put this deal together. Yeah. I've got this idea. And a lot of people don't do that because they just think, no way, right?
And even though it is
a no way to you, it's like, dude, take a shot in the dark. A lot of people aren't willing to do that. You never know what a thorn in the side this project was for the current owner. Like, maybe he's tired.
He just wanted to wash his hands.
Yeah, maybe he's like, dude, I don't even want to pay these property taxes anymore. I don't want to, you know what I mean? You never know what he's going through in his life to where it's like, this is relieving. And it's like the other huge thing for me that I get when I'm listening to your story, because I had someone tell us one time, I think it was in Arte. I think Ed and Andy, I don't remember which one, but they talked about how all these entrepreneurs want to go so big, so fast, and they miss a really crucial step that allows them to be able to get big and expand in bigger opportunities. And he's like, it's in the community. Like, you need to start local. And so your experience of like pulling the community together to build these skate parks, right? In New Mexico, and then now you're living in Texas and you do it there, and then you do it here. It's like, bro, like, you created a reputation of somebody that can like ingrain himself in the community and bring value to the community, and that opens the opportunity for more opportunity. Like,
it does. It really does.
And it's like, people don't realize that, man. And I think about that actually quite a bit sometimes. I think like, man, what can I do more in my community? Because I see like the local furniture, you know, boss around town. Like, he like owns the biggest furniture store. Like, I see him out there handing out waters at the marathon, you know,
getting
like,
involved.
I see him out there always involved in things for the kids. And it's like, you know what?
The world needs more of that right now, man.
It carries weight. And even if you're doing it for an opportunistic reason.
Oh, I wasn't. Still, I was just trying to be able to help the community and maybe like pay my mortgage, and it just blew up, you know?
Some people, it's like, dude, they literally just want to do that. And it's like, that fills them up. Some people are like, I want more opportunity, so I want to do it. It doesn't matter. It's like still adding value to the community. 100%. And obviously it's reciprocal. It brings value back to you as well. You can't not do great things and feel good about it. But even if you do it for an opportunistic reason, it's like, it's awesome,
and
I
did want to get involved with the community to like show them like I wasn't some person just up here like trying to, you know, take over stuff or, you know, do anything like that, but legitimately help the local kids, because Stevensville is a tiny little town.
Yeah, you said don't worry about it, we're going global.
Yeah, exactly. Global glamping.
Well, dude, how long did it take you though? Like, because like that's what's incredible. A lot of people will have this thought like, well, that would be cool to be more involved in the community, but the good old boys or the, you know, the well-knowns in the community. It's probably not going to happen. Like all those, you know, limiting beliefs that people have stop them from doing it. But it seems like you've done it fast everywhere that you've went.
It, like I said, it's kind of all been like divine timing and divine connections. And
you know, when you say divine, that does that mean like, are you like a meditator?
Yeah, or I meditate.
Like, what's your kind of routine? Like, because when you use that word, usually that word divine isn't used just by the average or normal person, right? It's usually used with somebody that's like
spiritual.
I'm or very spiritual. They have some sort of, like a yogi or a, you know, you meditate or something, like you look within. So and that's why you call it the divine or God, the divine.
Numerology. So you have some sort of.
Okay, here we go.
So when my dad passed away,
numerology,
I legit prayed. I was like, God, show me a sign that you're my true father and that I can trust that you're going to be here to be with me and protect me. And then sure enough, man, I was actually driving down to South Padre Island with Megan Flaherty, rest in peace. She ended up passing away from leukemia, actually. But when I was going down after my dad passed away, it was like a few months later. It ended up being July 4th, which was my mom and dad's anniversary. It would have been their 20th year anniversary. So another like just, you know, synchronicities and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I was looking at the itinerary for that weekend. And sure enough, I scrolled down to July 4th and I kept hearing this song. I'll wake up to find your glory divine and I'll finally bow at your feet. And I love that song. And I was like, wow, that's a beautiful song. And then didn't know who sang it, didn't know what it was, but I just like really like ended up hearing it like three times. It was like a 7-hour drive down to South Padre from San Antonio. And when I looked at July 4th, it said building 429. And that's my birthday. So like even even getting chills, like just talking about it, dude. And my parents was supposed to be their 20th anniversary, and then seeing building 429, I was like, whoa, dude, what is this? And then when I get there to this retreat, sure enough, it's a freaking band.
Yeah.
The band is called Building 429, which is from Ephesians 429. It's like, what, let no corrupt communication come out of your mouth, but listen and give grace to those who to hear, basically edifying, right? And building people up. Because I'd ask them.
Is that a Bible verse?
It is.
Dude, I respect people that can do that.
They can pull them.
That's like a goal of mine. Like, I want to be in a conversation and just pull a verse out of nowhere. You know, Corinthians 2:3.
I'm not like that. There's two Bible verses that I do know. It's Ephesians 4:29 and then John 3:16. God so loved the world, he was only begotten son.
Well, you only have to say Bible verses once or twice, and then people think that you know pretty much the whole thing. So you didn't have to divulge that information of just knowing too.
Then that's where I realized that, whoa, like there is a way that the metaphysical and the physical can interact if you're able to like receive it and not just know that it's like a coincidence. And so ever since then, that was my sign, 429, showing that there was a higher power kind of watching after me all the time. And like, I always see 429 everywhere.
It's just, do you believe that if you're actually looking for it, that you'll find it? And that, and it's the same as people like
law of attraction.
Thinking negatively, they'll find it.
Law
you know
of attraction.
What I mean?
Yeah. So it really is. Definitely.
It's God's always there, but when you're actually looking for the signs, you'll find them.
You will.
Right?
You really will.
But if
and
you focus on the negative, you'll never
negative.
See them. You know?
And the more you open up your mind and your heart and your soul to that kind of stuff is you can see it. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, this has been my dream. I've had this vision of sitting with some real estate investors and talking about how, you know, not only is the real estate market amazing, but now this glamping thing is a whole niche. And you were talking about community. Mm-hmm. I had a guest actually from Hip Camp give him a tour of the property. He's like, man, I really love what you're doing with global glamping. Because if you guys, I'll take you out to the property sometime in Stevensville. You get there. It's beautiful, man. It overlooks 2,600 acres of Lee Metcalf Wildlife Refuge. There's these two huge pine trees that look over it. I call it Heaven's Gate. And we were walking around the property, and he stopped at Heaven's Gate. And he said, can you describe global glamping in three words? And I was like, oh, shoot, you're putting me on the spot, bro. I was like, actually, yeah, man, it's community, love, and togetherness. I was like, yeah, shoot, everyone needs a little TLC, togetherness, love, community. And boom, that was the moment that the slogan for global glamping was born. It's like, everyone needs a little TLC, togetherness, love, community, explore your world.
Yeah.
And so from that moment on, it's just been.
And those are my initials. There's your more really? Synchronicity.
TLC?
Trevor Lee Cowley.
Bro.
Bro.
That's so cool.
So you guys, guys got it all. Dude. He's synchronizing. Just, dude, you're just tuning in, dog. That's
cool. See, you guys are getting to witness a magical moment, man.
Yeah.
And so that's, that's where when I say divine, is I truly know that, like, once you can clear yourself of all that negativity and everything and all of the drug abuse and alcohol abuse, because I was so just like all in my head all the time of like, oh, poor me and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, making excuses of why my life wasn't the way I wanted it to be. And, you know,
your life's not going to get better unless you get rid of the shit that's actually making it bad.
100%.
You can't just start 100%. Doing some things that are better and keep all the bad shit.
Without a doubt.
And expect something good.
And if you think that it is, you're lying to yourself, right? And I was in a lot of denial for a lot of that time, thinking that drugs and alcohol weren't the reason why I wasn't where I wanted to be or doing the things that I wanted to do. And it wasn't until my first year of being sober, March 1st is the day of my sobriety day. It's actually like my birthday. I get more excited about like sobriety day than I do than a lot of the holidays, man. It's that special to me. And until I reached the first year of sobriety, man, I couldn't actually understand how much drugs and alcohol were affecting my life. And then when I got to that point, it really was able to, you know, take that hard look in the mirror and realize like, wow, a lot of these issues that you keep blaming everybody else for, and God, I was mad at God for a long time, man. Like, you know, taking my dad, my best friend literally had shot himself, committed suicide, you know, all kinds of different things. So I was mad at the world, was mad at myself, was mad at God. And until I was able to get sober and truly not only forgive myself for being such an idiot and being an F up, bro, it was just like, I couldn't realize that stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, we wouldn't be sitting here right now unless all that stuff happened. So it's truly made me who I am today. And I get to, you know, now I've been waiting to really get a platform to start telling my story. And I truly feel like this very moment is a start for something, you know, bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, having RBO here this weekend it's been an absolute freaking pleasure getting to know you guys and, you know, hearing some of y'all's stories. Kayla's phenomenal. Andrew's phenomenal. Corey's great. Yeah. I think they were the three I got to connect with, you know, the most over the time.
It's an amazing team and an amazing group.
Yeah.
And it is, dude, this is a awesome starting point for your journey and your platform, you know? But dude, like, How long sober are you?
4 years.
4 years?
March 1st,
It's amazing, like, quickly things can happen.
Yeah.
Being on the other side of that. But at the same time, I mean, you got to be grateful for that time, too, you know? Like, it's so much more blissful by having that darkness that you got to just get through and overcome.
And being an entrepreneur, if you were to tell me the things that I had to go through to get to this point, I legitimately probably would have been like, nah, man, like, that's
hell no.
Yeah,
to the hell no. You deal with it one day at a time, you know?
And so, you know, but it's perseverance, and like you said, there's been multiple times thinking about throwing in the towel.
Let's put that into perspective, because somebody did throw in the towel in your story, and the individual that threw in your towel was the owner of the land that just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah,
he drug it as far as he could take it, and
same with the guy with the other land, $2,500.
And yeah, exactly. Like, there's people out there that they've taken what they could take, and they're ready to end their journey, and that's where somebody else comes in that
for opportunity
has that perspective. Well, you wouldn't have found it if you also weren't ingrained in the community and actually looking. Right? They say finding's reserved for the seekers. Right. If you're not seeking it out, you will never find it. Nothing special going to come to you and land in your lap. But, you know, that's part of your story, is you're always kind of looking, you know, for a way in, for your opportunity. How can you create it? Right. And there's always opportunity. And so individuals that have that type of an eye will eventually get a break, right? And find an opportunity.
Perseverance is huge. Yeah. So don't give up, man. Yeah. Keep working hard, because your time will be there.
Yeah, no doubt.
Sure.
Yeah. Shoot your shot, man. Like, you know, like you did with the guy that's owner of this land. And I honestly don't even know how the conversation happened with you to be on the podcast. But Kayla was like, hey, man, he gave us a super, like,
Well, that was part of the negotiation. Cause I think when I did all the numbers, yeah. I mean, it was close to like 40,000 to like be like yeah. actual cost. But yeah. as getting the rehab going on and it not being like full capacity, I was like, one, I don't want to charge full price, obviously, but hey, I'll give him a
Willing and Dylan, bro. Yeah. You're making it happen.
Give him a super deal. And I knew this was my kind of my shoe in to be able to get to know you guys and maybe tell my story. And I was like, here, well, I know you guys have a rather successful business, and I like to be able to, you know, tell my story, and hopefully this reaches one person.
Yeah. And I was glad you were on. Yeah, it was cool.
I appreciate
it's
that.
It's a very authentic journey that you shared.
It wasn't easy, and it hasn't been fun, but it's been very rewarding. And there's been multiple times where I did want to throw in the towel, and my property in Stevensville now is worth, you know, quite a bit more than when I first bought it 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I could have easily sold it and made significant amount of money. But there again, higher power kept saying, no, I'm using this for a bigger purpose. And it's not about you cashing out and making $1 million. Like, this is something bigger that I need to work on for that community to tell your vision, all that other stuff. So as hard as it was, I hung on. And then the whole thing I was talking about with the cease and desist, come to find out that it was illegal what the county was doing to me. I have an attorney now. There's a group. It's called SHIT. It's Sanitation Health Environmental Team. And so
Sanitation SHIT. Health.
I'll bring it up just
environmental.
Really,
I don't know.
Let's see. Sorry, one sec.
Environment's an E. So it's SHIT.
Yeah. SHIT. Sanitation Health Issues Team. And this is actually going to turn into a nationwide movement, because there's a lot of counties and municipalities telling people that they can't put a portable structure on their property when, you know, they're selling these $500,000 million mortgages that 90% of America can't really afford. And so they're legitimately wiping out the middle class, and we have no places to buy homes or live, but you can buy a badass dome. I mean, those domes are nice, man. Like, I mean, you can get one of those completely built out, like you see it with the Trex decking was like 70K.
Yeah.
And you can live in one of those things, right?
And you get a dome in my backyard.
You do. Mm-hmm. And instead of, put it up on Airbnb. You should put a dome on Airbnb, and it'll pay for your mortgage.
Dome out the whole horse pasture.
You should. Yeah, like, right. Seriously. Or some yurts or whatever.
Make some money, dude.
Make some fat. Like, I never got to finish this. I kind of lost track, but that 30% occupancy I was talking about was going to pay me like, you know, $2,500 cover my mortgage. The first year, we did 93% occupancy with the yurt year round, and did over $70,000 with the 1 year in the hip camp. And then now that property has 4 yurts, 3 geodomes, bathhouse, still has the warehouse. Yeah. We're getting that back opened up now since we've been able to overcome all that stuff. This was just about a month and a half ago when I finally was able to get the attorneys and all that other stuff, finalize that. Yeah. And then so now, having this place to cash flow and cover my butt for the other property too, it's just been it's crazy, man. And now just sitting here, it feels surreal. It really does.
Yeah, dude, you're blessed, and it's you know, everything we talked about. And I really feel like these opportunities are out there all the time for people, but the problem is people think about everything that could go wrong, you know, just like you driving to the first property, $2,500 down. There's no way, but you still went there.
You still shot your shot.
You still checked it out. And then even the commitment, right? It's like, okay, well, I got this property now, $2,500 down, but there's still all these things to do, right? Building the skate park, putting the domes up, all that stuff. And it's like, people still are just like, they think about everything that could go wrong and it holds them back.
What about everything could go right?
Everything could go right if I just commit, you know? And so you really ingrained yourself in it. You committed to something, and now it's I did commit for sure.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
It's cool, man. It's a really inspiring story.
Thanks, man.
And I'm glad you were able to come on and share with us today.
I'm glad to have you guys out at Triple G's Resort, man. Yeah. You guys are welcome.
How do people
back.
Find you if they want to look you up and take a trip to Montana?
Yeah. You can go to our Instagram, glamping.global. You could look on our website, www.glamping.global. It's not a .com, it's a .global.
Could they go to the hip camp?
You can go on
for some of your other ones.
Airbnb.com/p/global glamping has all of my listings on there. You could prefer Airbnb though. Yeah, triplegsresort.com.
Go to the website.
triplegsresort.com.
Cut Airbnb on that revenue.
Yeah. And then actually we're developing a global glamping app too. So we're actually developing an app specifically designed
towards
Global Glamping Glacier is what it stands for.
But the website URL is triplegsresort.com. Yep. Okay.
And I'll make a promo code 20% RBO.
Okay.
So anybody who wants to book and come and see us, we'll get you
just
guys
the,
a 20%
just those three letters, RBO.
RBO. Okay.
Yeah. If you guys want to come check out literally the most beautiful part of Montana. Because I've been through West Yellowstone and Big Sky. I haven't been ever. Montana's a big state, but, dude, Glacier is amazing.
Well, I know you've been to the river up the street with the cold plunge. Was that cool? Do you ever go do that? We live right here, bro. Yeah,
I haven't. Well, I go swimming and stuff like that sometimes.
In that cold-ass water?
Yeah.
It's cold out.
Well, in the summertime, it gets really warm, July, August. And then there's, some amazing... Glacier Guides does a great job of doing whitewater rafting, kayaking, canoeing. And that's really what Global Glamping is all about, is creating the experience as well as being in nature. Because I've learned that the glamping industry is very, it's a lifestyle. So, getting outdoors, experiencing that stuff and being able to do like the cool activities and everything and intertwining that, like some of the stuff you guys got, the ATVs.
I think people want to be outdoors. They just don't want to
rough it
experience. Yeah, you know, they don't want to stick in their back.
That's why I was so stoked to win my,
but they all, there's a middle ground and this connects you to nature, but also gives you a shelter.
It does.
And being 100%. A little closer to a group too,
Bears
and shit.
Yeah.
So, they don't come around in groups as much. that was great, bro. And what was your Instagram again?
At glamping.global.
Okay. Yeah. You guys go check them out. Yeah. Connect with them. Especially if you want to get out in this area. But that was a great story, man.
Yeah, no doubt.
This is the first time I really shared my story to like a real platform. I've been able to tell people and people that know me closely, but I don't really ever go fully in depth.
Straight
of
one
everything.
Ear at a time, not like 10,000 ears at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and if you guys ever have any questions about glamping, hit me up.
Yeah.
Hit them up.
Perfect.
Guys, we hope you enjoyed today's episode. Till next week, keep kicking ass.
Peace. Yeah.